Hello and welcome to Africa Media Matters, featuring interviews and comment about media issues across the continent. I'm Audrey Brown. Coming up, we hear from a key figure on the Nigerian independent publishing scene, Mukhtar Bakare, who's helped stimulate widespread interest in African fiction, both at home and abroad.
What we've been able to do is to glamorize writing again, to make writers cool again for young people.
And we'll be discussing a film that offers cinema-goers a fresh take on life in 21st century Africa.
We wanted to tell a story out of Africa that wasn't genocide, dictatorship, guns, that was a much more up-to-date story of Africa, much more positive, and here was an opportunity.
More on those stories coming up after this. Africa Media Matters is brought to you from IWPR Center for Crisis Reporting. IWPR, giving voice, driving change. And we begin today's program with the news that the government of Zimbabwe has issued an arrest warrant for the exiled editor of the Zimbabwean newspaper, Wilf Mbanga. The writ was issued against Mbanga over a story published back in 2008 about the alleged murder of the director of Zimbabwe's Electoral Commission, Ignatius Mushangwa. But Wilf Mbanga says his paper didn't publish the story. The Committee to Protect Journalists has called for the immediate withdrawal of the arrest warrant. Wilf Mbanga joins us now. Hello, Mr. Mbanga, and welcome to Africa Media Matters. So how did you discover there was a warrant out for your arrest?
The police in Harare issued a statement which was broadcast hourly last week, announcing that they had issued a warrant for my arrest and that they'd launched a manhunt for me. They then informed the other journalists who were inquiring that, in fact, they had now given this warrant of arrest to Interpol to arrest me anywhere in the world.
And what's the newspaper story that's at the heart of all this?
Well, they claim that the Zimbabwean carried a story in which we said Mugabe had met some officials to plot the murder of some election official. Now, for a start, we never carried that story. And secondly, we have no record of it anyway. They've given the date of the 11th of December 2008. As the day the story was carried. That issue has no story at all about this murder. So it is a trumped-up charge, which I deny, and I don't know why they're doing this.
You say your newspaper didn't carry the story. The Zimbabwean government says that you did. So why do you think they're accusing you of carrying the story?
I don't know why they are doing this, especially when we can prove that we never carried the story. I have several copies of that day, and we can prove to anyone I've offered to go anywhere to be interviewed, to take my copy with me, to prove it to them that we did not carry this story at all.
Do you think that this has anything to do with elections scheduled for next year in Zimbabwe?
I think so. You notice that they have now started harassing journalists again in Harare. Sydney Size, a freelance journalist, was beaten up in Mutare, this in border town. Some journalists from The Independent in Harare, in Bulawayo, were arrested this week. And there's this arrest warrant for me.
And what happens next?
They are saying that I should be arrested and taken back to Harare to face music. But I never did it.
That was Wilf Mbanga, editor of the Zimbabwean newspaper, talking to us on his mobile phone. And now we take a look at another group of journalists keen to uncover stories that some might prefer to keep under wraps. They're the Forum for African Investigative Reporters, known as FAIR, a professional network based in Johannesburg, whose goal it is to enhance investigative journalism across the continent. Its director, Evelyn Groenink, told me earlier why she'd set it up in 2003.
There was absolutely no network connecting journalists who were questioning events rather than either reporting or criticizing government. It was either opinion or just going to press conferences. The people who were doing more than that didn't have a link to one another. So every time there was a big issue that affected more countries, like the same company would bribe people in Mozambique and Angola, The journalists would always just only write local stories. So what we started to do was actively headhunt people who were doing more than just reporting.
And I believe also that you have very distinguished journalists on your board. Tell us a little bit about them.
Yeah, we just selected a new board that is the best among the best, not only in terms of journalism, but also in terms of dedication to the profession. And our new chairman from the DRC, who lives in exile in Ivory Coast, Eric Nwamba, has played a very prominent role in exposing, for instance, traffic in young footballers, little boys, young boys who end up often on the streets in Belgium and France because unscrupulous agents make a lot of money from these boys' families who think they're going to be famous footballers. So this human trafficking young footballers has been exposed by him. Our treasurer, John Grobler, in Namibia, has exposed how the Namibian governing elite is looting tourism resources. And our Secretary General, Theophilus Abba, is somebody who follows the shenanigans of the Nigerian government.
Is there an appetite for investigative reporting? Because many people say that it's a dying art.
I don't know, maybe it's dying in the rest of the world, but we grow by 5-6 people every week. There is such an amazing hunger for finding out, big word, truth.
You've just recently had the Fair Award ceremony in Johannesburg. Tell us about the winners and the stories.
I interviewed the two main winners, Emmanuel Maya from Nigeria and Anas Anas from Ghana. And I couldn't help myself. I had to ask them, guys, are you for real? One actually went as a trafficked person with human traffickers through the Sahara Desert. He stayed there for a month. He was at risk of being abandoned in salt mines, at risk of being shot. And this is undercover journalism. So if they discover that you are a journalist, you've basically had it. And the other one went into a mental hospital to expose what happened with the health budgets and hard drug use that was going on and abuse of patients. And he ended up having quite an impact. But this guy couldn't escape from having to eat those psychotropic drugs or whatever you call them because he was undercover posing as a mental patient. He ended up all trembling and incoherent because of the drugs, and he had to sort of go back to normal before he did the story. I mean, he made an incredible change in Ghana. His work contributed to real improvements. So I can only take my hat off to guys like that.
That was Evelyn Groenink, director of FAIR, talking to us from Johannesburg. You're listening to Africa Media Matters from the Institute for War and Peace Reporting. And now we'll hear from a man who's breathing new life into the book business in Nigeria. Mukhtar Bakare left a steady job in banking to set up what is now Nigeria's leading independent publishing house, Farafina. Among his fans is the author of Half of a Yellow Sun, Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie, who described him as a widely read, thoughtful, pan-African humanist. Hello, Mr. Bakare. Thanks for joining us today. And let me start by asking you, why did you leave banking to go into publishing?
I went into publishing to fill a gap because at that point, I noticed that all the stories that we read when we were growing up had kind of ceased. All the companies that were publishing such stories that we grew up to love had stopped publishing them. So we felt there was a gap in the market and we wanted to fill that gap.
Why do you think it's important for Nigerians to read homegrown fiction?
It's very important because fiction helps us to understand what we are dealing with. Fiction helps us to be able to grasp the important trends and issues in society so that we can better manage the transition from where we are to where we are going.
What effect has your publishing house had on writing in Nigeria from the author's point of view and also from the reader's point of view?
We went into publishing fiction at a time when the bigger publishing companies wouldn't touch it. That kind of gave the authors here a little bit more confidence that they can still continue to write and be published. But from the reader's viewpoint, you know, because we do sell our books for very, very low and affordable prices. So we're able to bring some of the best contemporary Nigerian writers, you know, to their natural markets in Nigeria.
You've had some great successes with your authors, notably Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie. Is there much difference in what Nigerian readers of fiction and readers elsewhere in the world are looking for?
I think good fiction is good fiction, and Nigerian sensibilities is not that divergent from global sensibilities. And Chimamanda is as popular in Nigeria as she is anywhere else in the world. And her books are on the curriculum for school in Nigeria. And there are 150 million people in Nigeria, so the market is deep for good quality writing that can connect with the values and the aspirations of the people.
You have a big market, but the economic climate is difficult all over the world. So how is that affecting business?
The economic climate all over the world and readership in Nigeria, the connection really is the capacity of the business organizations to function. But the more structural issues are issues of distribution, the distribution network that make it difficult to access the large number of readers scattered all over the country. But the issue of not being able to access readers in Nigeria has been ongoing even before the recent economic meltdown globally. But that is because the commercial infrastructure in the country was degraded during the military years. 30 years, the commercial infrastructure basically broke down. So, you know, it's been a very challenging industry, but we are still there.
What role did the internet play in helping you get the business off the ground?
In the early stages, you know, the internet helped us to reach a lot of the young, ambitious writers and not so young writers, because Nigerian writers tend to be scattered all over the world. So being on the internet gave us access to them. And also being on the internet makes it possible for us to reach readers that we might otherwise not be able to reach. And I suspect the impact of the internet will be more dramatic in the future, because a few months ago, broadband landed in Nigeria. In the next few months, we start feeling the impact on the consumer side. So the internet may even be more important in distributing fiction in Nigeria.
Now, I believe that apart from publishing, you also run workshops for editors, and you're also training other publishers.
That's actually not commercial. You know, we have a not-for-profit segment, and the idea is to use that platform to promote reading and writing in Nigeria and across Africa. And every year, we organize a writer's workshop, which Chimamanda anchors, and she tries to bring writers that she admires from all over the world. And we take entries from whoever is interested, and we shortlist 20 people and invite them to the workshop. And over 10 days, you know, they work with experienced writers and then try to improve the quality of their craft. Then apart from that, we have the editor's workshop, which has been kindly supported by Trust Africa, because we don't have a lot of good quality editing in the country. So we try and bring experienced editors and bring young, promising editors from different publishing houses together.
Tell us, what do you think you've achieved so far?
What we've been able to do is to glamorize writing again, to make writers cool again for young people. It's okay, once again, for young people to want to be writers, you know, because you know, we have writers like Chimamanda Adichie, like Sefi Atta, who are very glamorous and successful. So it's cool for young people to aspire to be writers all over again.
Thanks so much for talking to us, Mr. Bakare. That was Nigerian publisher Mukhtar Bakare joining us from Lagos. In a moment, we're going to be talking to one of the producers of the film Africa United, a British-Rwandan co-production which has already been favourably compared to Slumdog Millionaire. It tells the story of a group of children who travel 3,000 miles to reach the 2010 World Cup in South Africa. Among them is a Rwandan AIDS orphan and aspiring football manager played by Erie Ndayambaje. In this clip, he explains how to make a football with a condom.
Hi, my name is Dudu. That means bug. I'm going to demonstrate to you how to make a football in Africa. First of all, you need ingredients. Most important is you need a condom. Doesn't matter what kind, I get mine from the UN. But any kind will do, except blackjacks. Condom can stop HIV/AIDS spread. If my mother and father had one, maybe then they would still be here. So please, be safe sexing.
One of the producers of Africa United, Jackie Shepherd, told me earlier how the project came about.
The idea for the film that became Africa United actually came from a Rwandan producer called Eric Kabera, who'd had an idea about a kid walking to the World Cup, developed a treatment with some colleagues in Rwanda, wrote a script, and a colleague of his, Ayub Kasasamego, sent it to us in the UK and said, wow, you know, I think this is a story that you guys would be interested in.
What did you like about the project and the idea of it?
One of the things that my producing partner, Mark Blaney, and myself had wanted to do for some time was to tell a story out of Africa that wasn't genocide, dictatorship, guns, a white protagonist going in and saving the nation, you know, that was a much more up-to-date story of Africa, much more positive. And so here was something that was, wow, you know, Africa about to do the World Cup for the first time ever. And here was an opportunity to use that as a peg to hang on a much more exciting story. So we're not pretending that everything is lovely, but at the same time we're trying to show an Africa of the 21st century.
Now, besides the story itself about these three children, what issues come out of it?
Well, we obviously cross 7 countries. And along the way, the 3 children who set off, 2 of them are AIDS orphans, whereas our other kid, the footballer, is actually from a fairly prosperous Rwandan family. But along the way, they pick up a couple of other kids, one of whom is in the sex trade, and the other one is a child soldier.
How difficult was it to make the film?
Well, you're making a film with 5 child actors who've never acted on film before. We were moving location every couple of days in the height of an African summer on a very low budget. I'm not sure that I need to say more, really.
So is the film making any money yet?
Well, there's always a long road between a film getting out there and actually moving into net profits. But the important thing for us is that at a very early stage, we partnered with UK-based charity Comic Relief. And so 25% of any net profits will go into a fund that they will manage for us to send money back into good causes in Africa.
That was Jackie Shepherd, one of the producers of Africa United. That's it for now, and thanks so much for listening. We hope you'll listen again to the next edition of Africa Media Matters. This program was brought to you by the Institute for War and Peace Reporting and made possible by the support of the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation. To subscribe and for our terms of use, please go to iwpr.net/Africa Media Matters, or you can subscribe through iTunes. IWPR, giving voice, driving change.